must be like
this is the number one top 40 hit in the old Soviet Union, Mother Russia, with two bullets to the back of your head if you don't get up and dance. At least you better. If the sycophants, toadies, and lackeys of Vladimir Putin have it their way. But as we're high atop Madison Square Garden, these great insulated facilities provided to us for this broadcast by NJDiet.com. I know it's raining out there. It's pouring in other areas. It's spritzing in other areas. But it doesn't matter what the weather is. It's another day, and it's another series of Russians who have emerged in that meeting that took place with Donald Trump Jr., his brother-in-law, Kushner, Manafort, the campaign manager at the time for the campaign of Donald Trump to become president. And now it appears, according to CNN, there may be as many as 8 people who sat in Trump Tower for anywhere from 20 minutes to a half hour discussing, well, what Donald Trump Jr. said was adoption restrictions in Russia, or what the former Soviet lawyer, Russian lawyer, said was Donald Trump Jr. pressing her on coming up with dirt about the Hillary Rodham Clinton campaign. On the line, though, to discuss the many ramifications as they change by the moment, Christopher Hahn. Oh, he's the heartthrob of liberals and a human pinata in his weekly appearances on the Fox News show. Thanks for joining us again on the Drive Home at 5, Chris.
I'm doing okay, my man. How are you doing today?
I've had better days. But the Trump White House has had better days. What do you make, Chris, of the fact that every day we learn, it's almost like whack-a-mole, that once we learn that there was a Russian in the room, it turns out now there were 2, times that by another 2, 4, who knows how many more?
The Russians are like rabbits. They keep on multiplying in the Trump administration, I guess, right? Every single day we learn something new, and every time we learn something new, it's worse because these guys don't want to tell us the truth. And if we can't believe them now, we probably never will be able to believe them. And it's really, I don't know why there isn't somebody on that team saying to the president and his staff, let's just put it all out there so we get it over with. And I guess the reason why they're not doing that is because it's really bad. And I think we should start preparing for more bad news from them.
All right, but you say bad news. Most of America couldn't care jack diddly squat about these meetings with Russians. They're interested in jobs. They're interested in the economy. They're interested in the Trump campaign making America greater. So why is it that people like yourself, Christopher Hahn, and members in the media have this insatiable desire just to talk Russia, 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 Putin, Putin, Putin?
I think that because it's a big story, my friend. And while most Americans don't care about it yet, and I agree with you, Trump's not losing the media war yet. He is losing the legal war, though. There are many sets of lawyers now with many different clients with many different interests. And those lawyers are basically a circular firing squad right now. And quite frankly, the Trump administration is at the center of that squad. And I don't know that it's going to survive another year like this. Because quite frankly, there's a very skilled prosecutor looking into this. And I don't think this could last much longer.
All right, but Chris Vahan, why not accept what was the lead editorial of the editorial board in the New York Post the other day? And they're obviously not enemies of Donald Trump. They've been very protective of him during his presidency. They basically labeled his son, Donald Trump Jr., an idiot, but that the president himself was not involved in this. And in fact, if nothing came out of this meeting, if in fact it was a nothing meeting because the woman was interested in talking about the adoption principles that Putin had severed as a result of his dispute with the United States, and there was no dirt about Hillary, isn't it all just basically zero out?
Well, right now there's been lie upon lie about this meeting, right? And if you want to believe for one second that Donald Trump Jr., who's not a guy like you and I, Curtis, who've worked for everything we've ever got in our life, but a guy who got everything he's ever had from his father, didn't run to his dad the minute he got those emails and tell him all about what he was going to get for his campaign, I've got a bridge in Brooklyn that is up for sale that you should be thinking about. because that's ridiculous. This is a guy who's gotten everything from Daddy, and he ran to Daddy as soon as he got those emails.
Yeah, but
trust me.
But Christopher, I understand it's cloudy outside, it's raining, and you're just gripped in sort of morose thoughts about the Trump administration. But
wait. What did I say just now that wasn't true, my friend? I know you, Curtis. You worked your butt off at McDonald's when you were 17 years old. I worked my butt off to get through Congress. To get through college. I worked for what I got. Donald Trump Jr. got it from Daddy. And when he had something to give Daddy, trust me, he ran to Daddy with it.
Well, in fact, I'll be talking about when I was at night manager of Mickey D's later on in the show as we reminisce what was 40 years ago today, the blackout in New York City that led to the 2 days of riots and looting and pillaging that just recently the city has recovered from. But Christopher, why don't you give the president credit for the many positive things that have occurred that the media won't focus on? The stock market is up. Job production is up. Obviously, we're turning back ISIS in both Syria and in Iraq. Why not give the president props for all the positive things that are taking place?
Because the president has nothing to do with any of the positive things that are taking place. The president has nothing to do with the stock market. If he wants to take credit for the stock market today, which is really a hangover from the Obama administration years anyway, when it starts crashing 6 months from now, he better be ready to take all the blame for it. The stock market goes up and down. That's what it does. The president has virtually nothing to do with it.
Now, in terms of health care, Mitch McConnell is pushing for potentially a vote sometime next week. Either two or three Republican senators are still not on board. They have said yet. This is a revised program from his initial presentation before his Republican Senate colleagues and the Democrats who have all unified and said, nope, we're not voting for anything that comes out of the House of Mitch McConnell. But don't you like this version a lot better? Come on. This meets a lot of the expectations that Democrats had initially when they thought the Senate version might be completely different than the Republican-pushed House version.
No, I don't like this bill at all. I mean, this bill makes it harder for people who are sick to pay for their health care, period. It's going to make it more expensive for the sick. It's going to make it more expensive for the old. If you're young and healthy, this is a great bill. But if you are old or going to get old, and if you are sick or are going to get sick, this bill is going to be bad for you. And that's what the Republicans are doing here. It's horrible.
But Chris Vahan, nothing would satisfy you. I don't even think Obamacare satisfied you because you're an advocate of Bernie the Altacaca Sanders and Elizabeth Warren, and formerly, before all of a sudden he got himself in a lot of trouble, Anthony the Weiner Wiener. You're for a single-payer system Democrats.
I'm for a single-payer. I think that the way they do it in London is better. They get better results and they spend less money. We spend $14,000 per person on health care per year. They spend $3,000 per person on health care per year. They have shorter waits, they have less illness, and they live longer. So what are we doing wrong here? We have a middleman that's taking a vig on every dollar spent on health care, and that is ridiculous. It's time to go for a single payer.
Am I assuming from this statement you just made, Christopher Hahn, that God forbid you get into some kind of a medical emergency, that you'll opt not to take advantage of the finest medical system in the world here in America?
No, we don't see that's nonsense, Curtis. We don't have the finest medical system in the world. If you're rich, we have the finest medical system in the world. But if you're an average Joe, if you're a guy driving a truck, if you're just a regular person, we do not have the finest medical system in the world. In fact, we're 13th of the industrial nations.
So is the moral of the Christopher Hahn story, if you get sick and you are not a man or woman of means, better to go off to England where they have the single-payer system because you're going to get better results, better health care, and better service and quicker service?
Yeah. If you're not a man of means, go to Canada or go to England. You'll do better off.
Marana, my boy, you are really delusional. Are you sure you weren't hitting the pipe before you came on the air to do this interview?
I don't drink, I don't smoke, I don't do drugs. I try to stay healthy. In America these days, you better do everything you can to stay healthy.
Well, that's Christopher Hahn. He is the heartthrob of liberal America, but you will see him every week on the Fox News Channel where the conservatives turn him into a human piñata. It is interesting, though, when you think of Donald Trump Jr. He claimed the other night when he got on with the Sean Hannity on the Sean Hannity program that he was going to come clean. Now we find out there may have been 8 people in that meeting at Trump Tower. 8 people, which would have meant possibly 5 Russians. And all he acknowledged initially was one. He is an idiot. The New York Post editorial board was exactly correct. Donald Trump Jr. is a complete stunad and an idiot.
I just want to celebrate another day of living. I just want to celebrate another day of life.
As we continue to take you home on the drive home at 5, let me give a high five and a shout out to embattled Attorney General Jeff Sessions, because yesterday he announced the indictments and arrests all across the nations of dozens of healthcare providers, whether they were occupational therapists, chiropractors, doctors, physical therapists, as part of the continued bilking of the Medicare and Medicaid system in Medicare and Medicaid mills all across the country. But because we focus on live and local issues, let's focus on the 10 Brooklyn and Queens doctors and healthcare providers who were charged with fleecing Medicare and Medicaid out of more than, get this, $125 million. $125 million. Total across the nation, $1.3 billion. Those arrested included 120 people accused of improperly prescribing opioids and other dangerous drugs, which continues to be a problem. As doctor after doctor writes out script in Medicare and Medicaid mills to people who are clearly dope fiends, who are not in need of pain management, and somehow they're able to go home in their palacios, their ponderosas, their mansions, look at themselves in the mirror and justify writing prescriptions to dope fiends at taxpayers' expense, which costs us millions and millions of dollars. But once again, let's focus on our live and local thieves. And I noticed from their names, those who are appearing in federal court in the Eastern District, downtown Brooklyn. They're from the Ukraine. They're from Russia. They're from Kazakhstan, Turkmenistan, Uzbekistan. They're Bukharians. They're from the Central Asian Republics, used to be part of the old Soviet Union. And they all came here to America, many of them with medical degrees. Many of them were physical therapists and occupational therapists. And out of the 10 who were cold-busted in Brooklyn and Queens, all are suspected of paying kickbacks to win patients, because doctors would steer patients to them for ailments that these patients didn't have. The patients were treated and the services were paid, all in part with Medicare or Medicaid funds. And many of them came out of an area that I know well, where I was born and raised, Canarsie, Brooklyn, out of a place called the Sunshine Medical PC in Canarsie. And what did the director of the Sunshine Medical Center say? We are shocked. I can't believe this. This is absolutely outrageous. Yeah, right. And it so often happens in the Russian, Ukrainian, Kazakhstan, Turkmenistan, Uzbekistan, Central Asian community. How many times have they been bussed before in Medicare and Medicaid mills? But it didn't stop there. If you look in Queens, there was a cardiologist who was charged in a separate case. As prosecutors said, this heart specialist broke anti-kickback rules by paying other physicians for referrals. This is sort of like the Meyer Lansky, a.k.a. the Hyman Roth of New York State Democratic politics. You know what I'm talking about. Sheldon the Schlemiel Silver, who just yesterday was given an opportunity at a new trial when his guilty verdicts filed against him were actually discharged over technicalities in terms of the way the jury was addressed in its final proceedings. He'll go back on trial. But he was up for pay for play and referrals and kickbacks. And these doctors, likewise, they have this in-and-out game in which there are millions of our tax dollars at play, and they're bilking it, and they're taking advantage of it, and they do it in the open in these Medicare and Medicaid mills, and they're immigrants in an immigrant community, and somehow they operate under the radar screen unsupervised. But here's something even worse. Health department officials continue to pay Medicaid managed care insurance premiums for more than 7,400 patients who are dead. That's $10.5 million. The checks go out. The persons on the other end of receiving the checks, probably family members or friends, continue to cash or bank these checks, and nothing is done. The payments for the dead were among 190,000 improper managed care premium payments that totaled $72 million that were made between 2010 and 2014. How many have been made since? Most of the improper premiums involve patients who, after enrolling in Medicaid, were subsequently found to be ineligible for the program. Now, it would be interesting because this was 2010 to 2014, but with so many more people being enrolled in Medicaid as a result of Obamacare, the law of the nation, could some of these folks not have been properly vetted out and just placed on those Medicaid rolls, even though they hadn't qualified? Inquiring minds want to know. Meantime, the Health Department and the Office of Medicaid Inspector General are trying to recover the money and implement better tracking procedures to ensure that deceased or ineligible recipients do not continue to cost us, the sucker taxpayer, dollars. In fact, $7.4 million of improper claims they claim have been recovered. $7.4 million of $72 million worth of claims. And, you know, each and every year we see more and more of this. You would think with the technology, with computerization, with cameras, with proper vetting procedures, you would think they would establish an internal affairs unit like they have for the police department that does integrity tests. All of these things would be saving us millions and millions of dollars. And again, who do we look to? Bureaucrats and officials who are just not on top of their job. They send the money out. They don't question it. Immigrants take full advantage of it, who are healthcare providers, who are occupational therapists, who are physical therapists. Now, it's not only immigrant professionals that are bilking the system. There are others, obviously, outside of the immigrant community. But time and time again, I can't tell you how many times it's been a Ukrainian, a Russian, somebody from the Central Asian Republics, Kazakhstan, Turkmenistan, Uzbekistan, Tajikistan. It's got to stop. But then again, there is no will to do that, either in Washington, either in Trenton, either in Albany, or at the local level, because many of these healthcare professionals end up whining, dining, and pocket lining their local officials. Oh, yeah. They end up greasing them so that all of a sudden the eyeballs, the intensity of any investigations will just go away. As we continue here on the drive home at 5, it was considered the major development that was going to economically empower the North Shore of Staten Island and benefit all the other 500,000-plus residents. And the plan was to model the tallest wheel, observation wheel in the world, after what has been a successful implementation of that concept in Las Vegas and in London. Be 630 feet, would end up costing about $600 million. Developer signed on, construction group signed on. And the construction has already begun. If you ever happen to be traveling along Bay Street near the North Shore, near Staten Island Borough Hall, and in the shadow of the Staten Island Yankee Stadium, you can see that there was major construction. The cranes are up, and everybody was for touch. They were feeling good. This is economic prosperity, economic development. But long ago, there was a voice out there who said, nope. This will be a disaster for Staten Island. And in many respects, he is considered the godfather of Staten Island politics, going back to the time that he was a congressman, left the House in order to run for the borough presidency, became borough president, the Republican borough president, and then became the godfather of the campaigns of first Rudy Giuliani to become mayor of the city of New York against David Dinkins, and then eventually Michael Bloomberg against Mark Green, as both those Republicans were able to become our mayors. On the line to discuss that now, former Congressman and Borough President of Staten Island, Guy Molinari. Thanks for joining us on the Drive Home at 5, Guy.
Oh, I'm delighted to be with you, Curtis. We go way back, you and I, and I'm happy to be able to be with you today.
Now, Guy, I remember that you were a voice out there to bring a NASCAR track to Staten Island. People vilified you.
Yep.
And then when you spoke up and you said this observation wheel, it's nonsense, it'll be a disaster, and they vilified you. And it appears now you're right. What happened to that project?
Well, you know, I feel badly about the whole thing because it was a disaster from day one. Before a terrorist attack on New York City, Rudy Giuliani and I were working hard trying to develop something in that area of St. George, Staten Island, facing Manhattan. Four projects that were really great things for Staten Island. And, of course, when the attack occurred, everything was dropped. And then this wheel comes along, a real honky-tonk, stupid thing that people wanted to foist upon us. The piece of property where the wheel is being built is one of the major pieces of property in the country. It faces Manhattan. It merits something that would help Staten Island's image in the future. And what do they give us? Something like this. I thought from the beginning it was going to be a disaster. I think now, in view of what has transpired in the last 25 or 30 hours, it is a disaster. So where do we go from here? We've got this thing, a monkey around our neck, and we got to get rid of it. Staten Island is a marvelous place to live, and Staten Island's North Shore faces Manhattan, one of the greatest vantage points in the country. And we really need to develop Staten Island in a good way. So I feel very badly about it because when I left office, I was heavily into developing projects that would be a merit to Staten Island and something for our future that we could all be very proud of. Now we got a stupid wheel project that's laying fallow, and I'm concerned about our future and where this thing is going to be. We're going to lay fallow for years and years and years? Could be. It could be. And where were our elected officials? They were out to lunch. That's where they were.
Well, it is interesting that the council for the management team that put together the capital investment to build this observation wheel, which make it the tallest in the world, is a former deputy mayor of the Rudy Giuliani administration, Randy Mastro. He went to court to try to suppress the information from being revealed to the general public. He said, if any information like this gets out, it will kill the project. Well, the information is out. Do you see any way that this project can be revived?
Well, I guess you have to say maybe, but I hope not. I hope it's dead forever. Randy Mastro happens to be a very good friend of mine. I have enormous respect for him. But he's a lawyer, and he's doing his job as an attorney. But, you know, I worked my entire life, my adult life, for Staten Island, and to see something like this occurring really bothers me deeply. And I'm happy that you gave me the opportunity to voice my opinions to the public. There's something good about Staten Island, Curtis, and the North Shore of Staten Island, that area that goes from Borough Hall to the Verrazano Bridge, is the future of Staten Island. It's all there, and I felt so badly when we had to abandon the projects because of what happened when the terrorist attacked us. But we were working hard, Rudy Giuliani and myself, to bring something really good to that area, this is what we got.
One final question, Guy Molinari. Why is it you have so much experience, people have credited you for doing so much for Staten Island and the city and also our country? Why is it when you stand up like you did at a meeting in which they were trying to bring a NASCAR track in, right near that Bayonne Bridge, the separation between Staten Island and New Jersey, they shouted you down. When you stood up and you spoke out against the observation wheel, they shouted you down. What is it about folks there in Staten Island that they won't listen to you?
Yeah, that would have been a great project, NASCAR. They were wonderful people. The family, the French family would have been great for us, and they would bring money to us and all that kind of stuff. But I think, I don't know, it was hard to understand. I thought for a while the other elected officials were going to back us and stand with us, but they didn't. And I guess, I don't know, maybe a little bit of jealousy over my accomplishments or some such thing. I just can't figure it out. But Staten Island is still a great place, and we still have a good future if, big if the people in charge look at what's happening and work together and try to bring home some good projects, not some junk like this thing, a tonky-tonk thing on St. George. I mean, that's a disgrace. It's an absolute disgrace. And I don't hear people yelling that they're all in favor of it anymore. Where are they? Where are they?
No, they've headed for the hills, but you certainly haven't. That's Guy Molinari, former congressman, former borough president, considered the godfather of politics, not only in Staten Island and New York City. And as we're in a mayoral election cycle, I can tell you, if not for Guy Molinari's guidance for Rudy Giuliani, he would never have become mayor. Likewise for Michael Bloomberg. Sometimes you hear that mentioned, but it isn't said enough. It was 40 years ago, the debut of Saturday Night Fever, which focused on the Bay Ridge area, Travolta and Company. But it was also historically the time when this city, at this particular occasion, 40 years ago, went through a blackout that then led to 2 days of pillaging, rioting, and all-out chaos and anarchy. And the actual date was July 13th. And it was the weather like we've been having of late. Well, you know, the clouds will roll in. All of a sudden, there'll be some lightning. And all of a sudden, heavy winds will gather, heavy rainfalls and flooding, and then more lightning. I'll never forget that night of July 13th of 1977 because I was a night manager of McDonald's. I had not yet formed the Guardian Angels, which I was to do close to 2 years later, but I was behind the counter. And I remember there were reports because we'd have WINS, the all-news network, radio network, in the background, and was talking about how the sky was cracking over Westchester County and Dutchess counties, and there was all kinds of lightning storms. And then all of a sudden, three lightning bolts destroyed five high-voltage overhead power lines running up and down the Hudson Valley, which fed us the electricity that supported all the lights and all the electricity demands of the city of New York. By 9:35, all the lights were out. The entire power grid failed, and all five boroughs were bathed in black. And as I was behind that counter, and the lights went out, and there was chaos in the lobby, people fearing the worst. Within moments, it didn't take that long. Hordes of young men, some women, were running up East Fordham Road in Webster. They were running towards the Grand Concourse. Along the way, the first place they hit as I ran out into the street to watch was Crazy Eddie's. That's right, you remember, Crazy Eddie's. And they smashed through the windows, and they pulled the gates off, and they actually had cars and little Jeeps at that time pulling the gates off, smashing through the windows, and grabbing the boom boxes and all the other gear that they could. And as they worked their way up the Grand Concourse, they hit the sneaker shops, they hit the jewelry stores and the gold shops, and then they made their way to the Champs-Élysées of the Bronx, the Grand Concourse, where there was furniture store after furniture store after furniture store in the shadow of Alexander's, the department store. And these marauders, these enemies of society, started smashing through the doors and windows of these closed furniture shops. And in some instances, management and workers were still in there, and they ran them right out. They looted everything they could out of the furniture shops, and then they torched them. Now, why would you torch them? And as they went up in smoke, you could smell the smoke everywhere, although in 1977, parts of the Bronx were burning down, so it wasn't a surprise sort of scent that filtered up your schnozola and turned the hairs in your nose, your nasal cavities, no. But still, the black, thick smoke was everywhere. And remember, this was on those same blocks that that all of us assembled just a few days ago to pay our final respects to Officer Familia in the old Lois Paradise Theater. That's right, that has now become a church of the Creflo Dollar Ministry around the nation. That was spared, but almost every other shop was hit. And it was as bad in Brooklyn, underneath the L, the J train, in which Bushwick was separated from Bedford-Stuyvesant. As soon as the lights went out, the horde of marauders came out and they started looting, smashing stores, burning down grocery stores, bodegas, supermarkets, furniture stores. It never recovered. In fact, now you don't really see the remnants of that, but for years, it was stark. Abandoned buildings everywhere. And you could see the flame marks still on some of the buildings from the arson that took place. Well, the hipsters and millennials have moved in to Bushwick and Bed-Stuy, where they used to punch you in your eye. That doesn't happen any longer. Not in most parts now that the hipsters have colonized. And they have no idea, these millennials and hipsters who come in from Iowa, where there are more pigs than people, and Idaho, where there are more potatoes than people. But I will never forget. And we certainly need to learn the lessons. Hey, look, during the Bloomberg administration, there was another blackout, and there was no chaos. There was no anarchy. Everybody sang kumbaya and helped one another. But I will never forget the sight of this diminutive mayor, a person of no consequence, Abe Beame, who didn't have the support of the residents of New York. It took him 2 days before he ordered the police in a shoot-to-kill situation against looters. That was the only thing that stopped the anarchy, stopped the arson, stopped the looting, stopped the savagery that was taking place. Boy, that was a dark, dark time in New York City's history, coupled with the Son of Sam, as all of a sudden we were being told about a demonic dog that was barking out, and eventually we would have learned that David Berkowitz was taking orders from this dog and went out with his .44 caliber gun and started shooting people randomly in lovers' lanes or outside of nightclubs, and it paralyzed the city so that people didn't even want to go out at night, young people. Oh, it was a horrible time. And that was the influence for me to start developing the Guardian Angels, which came about just 2 years later, right there in that same area of the Bronx that now exists in 16 countries and 130 cities. That blackout in 77 definitely spurred me into action.